This show is sponsored by Qualitest. Deploy software that you and your customers trust with Qualitest Testing and Business Assurance Services. Learn more about Qualitest at qualitestgroup.com.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of The Testing Show. This episode, we have Dave Snowden, who is the lead author and creator of Kinefin Framework, which is a sense-making model. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hi, good to speak to you.
And we also have Anna Roisman, who is probably one of the closest tester people that has worked with Dave the most on understanding Kinefin. Now, Anna's usually based out of New York. Is that where you are at the moment?
Yeah.
And Anna's just got elected to the board of directors of the Association for Software Testing. So congratulations, Anna.
Thank you.
And we also have Justin Moorman, who is, I believe, the sitting president of AST, if you won the last re-election.
Yep, that's right. I was re-elected and then re-nominated as president.
So Kinefin, I'm first aware of it. It's a Welsh word, I think. I first became aware of it as a framework in a Harvard Business Review article, and it has really snowballed since then. It's been used for lots of different applications, from government to immigration to software and systems. So I should probably just let Dave talk about Kinefin for a couple of minutes first, maybe from the software angle. Dave, can you tell us what Kinefin is and how software people would use it?
Mary Boone, who was the co-author of the Harvard article, who lives in Connecticut, she's actually with me in Wiltshire at the moment, so that's a real coincidence. Kinefin basically is a model which originates in natural science, which I think has been part of its strength. So it identifies ordered systems with repeating relationships between cause and effect, which are either obvious, i.e. everybody can see what they are and everybody buys into them, or they're complicated, they require analysis or some type of investigation or expertise. And then complex systems, which are ones which are non-causal, they're dispositional. So there aren't repeating relationships between cause and effect. The sheer number of things interacting with what's going on means you haven't got repeatable patterns that you can rely on to any degree. And then finally, the chaotic systems, which are ones with the absence of constraint, which if they happen accidentally, a disaster, but if you can create them deliberately, can be used for mass sensing, for sophisticated decision support. The principle behind Kinefin is to say that you need to first of all work out what type of system you're in, that's called ontological awareness, and then what type of knowledge you can have and how you make decisions, changes according to the system. That's actually very revolutionary, because for the past 20 or 30 years with systems thinking, people have assumed that all systems are ordered, they can be engineered, they can be designed, they can be predicted.
So once you've got the Kinefin framework, and we're going to include the video that's on YouTube, what do you do with that as a tester?
Well, first of all, you have to recognize what environment you're in. And as a context-driven tester, this is the first thing I would do. I would need to understand the context. I think I've been a big proponent on this complex environment when I talk to testers about Kinefin. One of the differentiations in this complex system is that whatever you do does not guarantee your results every time, meaning that success is not repeatable and failure is. Testers have to live in this environment for so long. We mainly operate in this environment. Understanding this framework really helps testers to have a conversation with the rest of the team, because there is a lot of times that testers being asked, when are you done testing? Is your testing complete? And we are working with the unknown unknowns, and testers have not been able to explain the type of environment they're in. There is really not enough information, but testers have been immersed in that for so long, and now I see in Kinefin, I see a hope. I see a hope for testing profession, because now they can have a conversation with the management, with the team, and appreciation of testing. And part of that is not having false expectation of what testing can and cannot do.
I remember when I first presented Kinefin to a national security advisor in Washington, he said that explains 50 years of failure in American foreign policy. We've been treating complex as if it was ordered. As Anna said, recognizing the different types of systems is stage one and critical. Once you do that, though, there's a whole body of tools and techniques. For example, in the complex domain, we focus on what's called anticipatory alerts. So what we did on counterterrorism work for DARPA was to actually trigger alerts to move that capability across into software testing. So alerting humans to look at things more closely, rather than assume that structured processes will produce predictable outcomes.
Okay, I think I get that. people that don't understand testing assume it is an ordered system and you can just break it down into its component parts and you can just test them and be done. And there will be no surprises because we've done all of the testing. It's not like that. And I find this idea of an alert intriguing. Can you give us some examples of what those alerts might look like?
So let's say that when we're about to build this for software testing, so this is a new program, so we take the weak signals, the small things that people observe, and we then gather those, and then in software testing, we keep continuous records at the observational level. We actually create new workbooks for this. Now, we're looking at this in software testing, also in project management. Yeah, so basically allowing testers and project managers to keep continuous records means we get the sort of microdata we need to trigger alerts based on multiple past patterns. Again, the issue is not to create a predictive model, but to say, look at this more closely. With Anna, we're working on a collaborative project to run over a couple of years, which will actually formalize that in terms of methods and software.
Can you be a little more explicit about what you mean when you say alerts? It sounds like there's some data being captured and then something that happens based on this data, but I don't quite understand the mechanism there.
So we collect the narratives, which is little observation that testers are good at. Sometimes testers have this gut feeling that something is not right, and there is no way of communicating that. There is a lot of observations that testers do on an ongoing basis. Sometimes there is something going on with the process and something going on with the communication. At some point, big issues coming up. Those issues have been right now. There is no way to capture something like that. If you have a large base of those little signals, at some point you're going to see, if you're going to observe data, you're going to see that something is wrong here. So if you want to pay attention to a certain area because the data alerts you that there might be a potential problem, then you can prevent those problems before they happen. Harnessing testers in the framework will really help because testers naturally observe a lot of things. For example, me as a tester, when I work with a team, I can predict what kind of bugs this team going to have. Not because I know the software they're going to produce, but just looking at the process, knowing the people, knowing what kind of bugs usually happen in this environment, I can predict a lot. So I can create my testing strategy accordingly. This is me. I've done it for many years. I didn't know what to do with this type of understanding that I have. When I talk to people and I predict certain things, I have no base why my things are right. Now, with that project that me and Dave will be working on, I see a lot of potential of exposing some risks.
So I'm going to give an example that I think is concrete, and hopefully you'll tell me that might make sense, or you'll tell me that I'm totally off, and then refine it. So one of the common problems that I've seen is I am testing search, and to do that I need a custom catalog. So I load a custom catalog from disk or something. There's some way I have of making it work, and my test passes. All the search functionality works. But I'm like, that's not right. So I go and I talk to the release engineer, and he says, oh, yes, that's a known issue in the test environment, and it's because of this databasey thing, and don't worry about it, it's going to get fixed tomorrow. Often that actually was a real bug. And when I go to the meeting and say, hey, this thing happens, I am, don't worry about it. Actually, one of the biggest bugs we had at SocialText, I was there at 3 years, one of the biggest problems that reached production we ever had was exactly that. Oh, it's just a dev environment. Oh, it's just a staging environment. It's no big deal. Not going to happen in production. And then we had a performance problem in production where the indexer ran wild and the system was down for a day while we just figured it out. So what I'm not quite clear on is, are we hoping that we're going to gather all this data? We're going to have lots of these little micro notes. And someone is going to compare the micro notes and say, hey, I noticed that four different testers were blocked by this issue that everybody keeps saying isn't a problem.
You're close, but you're not quite there. So basically, you're testing the software. Every time you see something or you notice something, you make a note. But you also interpret it. This is key. This is human metadata. And this is the stuff we developed around counterterrorism. So basically, you would position it into what's called higher abstract substructures. You're describing, you're not evaluating, and that's key. Because it means you're more likely to spot weak signals, it's less pejorative, etc. Over the course of a year or so, we'd have multiple of those micro-narratives, micro-observations, which means if the software starts to trigger an alert, you've got an objective statement. That's the second element. regardless of what you think about it going operational, we got an overall pattern here which is similar to similar failed patterns. We can't just take it for granted that we've actually got to go and do something. The visualizations we use for that come from evolutionary biology, so they actually measure fitness of an ecosystem and the ability of an ecosystem to be resilient. Effectively, we're bringing that biological metaphor across as well in terms of the visualizations and the evidence base. Lots more observations done as you go along, rather very specific concerns of those can be recorded, and then look for building previous histories of failures where we know the early stage weak signals, which were ignored, into the system, and creating an evidence base, which is when the screen goes red, guys, yeah, you can't say we're going to ignore this. We've got to look at it.
So I see some sort of mechanism or funnel to gather all this together.
Yeah, and the idea is what we're going to do is create workbooks, like we did with the US Army in Afghanistan. We said you don't have to write patrol reports if you keep multiple observations while on patrol. So that gives us better data than a sort of retrospective. We're using this as an alternative to retrospectives in Scrum. Basically, we create specific tools for testers, this is using the core software, in which they continuously record observations, notes, etc., in return for not having to write formal reports. That data can be integrated across multiple testers, you know, both user testers and techie testers. We're constantly accumulating that data at a metadata level, so we can see and detect patterns much faster.
So what constitutes a pattern? Is it just a repeated word or a repeated...
No, it's not. We deliberately don't search on that. So you can actually literally make an observation and have it linked to the code. It's the human interpretation. We would, for example, give you four triangles with labels on the corner of each triangle, and you place the observation into those four triangles. There's a whole bunch of cognitive neuroscience behind why we do this. You're increasing the cognitive load on the tester's brain so that they can't just go into a sort of business as usual response. They're forced to evaluate different things. Of course, that creates the metadata, and then we can look at patterns over multiple observations. Human interpretation is key on this, because human beings see things that machine algorithms can't.
That reminds me a lot of Kahneman System 1, System 2 thinking. It sounds like you're forcing people to slow down.
What you're doing is the thinking fast, thinking slow. It's a good theory based on observations, but we already knew about that in cognitive neuroscience. It's called autonomic and novelty receptive processing. Basically, if the autonomic side of the brain can't cope because it's facing something unusual, the novelty receptive side clicks in, and that thinks deeper, which is the sort of thinking slow side. When you increase the cognitive load on the brain by not giving it an easy answer, is you force it into novelty receptive mode, which means you get deeper interpretation, which has more value. We're using this in a lot of fields. Anna, she's an experienced tester. She said, I feel this. So we're allowing people to actually put the human cognitive layer of metadata over the observational data. Actually be more easy for us to sell this since the Internet of Things came along. Because what we got is a human sensor network to overlay the mechanical sensors. Yeah, and that makes it more effective.
Can I get you to repeat something real quick? You said you were putting the human cognitive layer over something, and I didn't quite understand.
Over mechanical sensors. So, for example, if you look at public transport, big data can tell you what journeys people took, but it can't tell you why they took them. So we add that layer over the sensor data. We're doing work on obesity where we got fitness trackers, but now we can capture the human aspect of how people see their condition to go with that material. And it's the same for software testing. So it actually will allow us to build databases over multiple projects in multiple contents and use that to create a wisdom-based approach to trigger alerts even on a small project. So as the system becomes more and more intelligent, it will be able to trigger more and more alerts, or actually trigger alerts which are more sensitive and focused.
So I guess you have case studies of companies or small projects or contexts that are actively using this right now?
We're moving it into software testing for the first time. We're now taking something which has been proven in a range of fields and applying it to a new field. That's the work we're doing with Anna. If people want to be part of that, it's going to be announced as a collaborative program so companies can join and get early access and be part of the creation. But the technology and the approach have been established now for over a decade.
Great. So how much progress have we made here? Have we tried this on a project? This is documented. Is there a case study we can read about?
Not on testing yet, no. We've done our first ones on user requirements capture. And we're about to start on project management. There are multiple cases in the development and the security sectors which you can look at, but you've got to move those sideways to software in terms of the way you think. So we're doing the same, for example, with user requirements, so continuous capture of user fragmented observations and experiences. Once they start to produce a discernible pattern, then you can allocate pair programming teams to build a prototype. So we get rid of the user requirement spec. a pre-scrum process within Agile. So there's a body of new tools and techniques now being moved sideways into the software, but all of them come originally from development and counterintelligence.
Is there a write-up of this approach somewhere that we can learn more about?
We're doing this through the university, where I've just set up a new research center. So there will be a formal invitation to join, which will have a basic write-up available in a week or so's time.
Great. Please, Anna, let us know when that's up, and we'll link to it in the show notes. Sounds fascinating. Justin, do you have any questions?
No, I think I've answered most of my questions. I am only vaguely familiar with the Kinefin model right now, so what I'm trying to do is make sense of the sense-making framework and figure out how we can apply it. I guess that's the exact study y'all are doing right now.
Yeah, you'll find it's been hugely used within the software development community, within DevOps and with Agile. It's probably the dominant sense-making framework now. If you do a quick search on Kinefin and Agile, you'll find a whole bunch of stuff. Anything with Liz Kao in it is worth looking at. She really gets it, but she's not the only one. I mean, anything I've retweeted, I'm okay with.
And where can our listeners go to learn more about you? It's cognitiveedge.com, I think?
Yeah, that's the website.
And what are you up to now? Are you speaking at any major events that they might be able to get to see you?
I'm doing stuff with Cisco next week in San Jose, but that's in company. I'm with the European Commission on this, on leadership this week, I think. San Jose, in a month or so's time, we have a full four-day training course. Speaking at Agile in Riga, and I'm speaking in Bosnia. Big software simulation conference I'm speaking at in Melbourne in a few weeks' time. So it's around and about.
Well, we'll link our readers to your About page or your calendar in the show notes. I'm sure you've got a public calendar.
Yeah.
So any parting thoughts before we say goodbye? I'm sorry, we've got a hard stop at the top of the hour.
The thing it's worth thinking about is what we're doing here is taking a natural science, not a social science approach, and we're shipping to an ecological metaphor from an engineering metaphor. So the basic argument is that software development and software testing is much more a sort of ecosystem than it is an engineering problem, and it needs to be treated as such. The engineering is hygiene factor. It's the wider ecological issues we need to address.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for being on the show, Anna. We'll have to have you back soon. Talk about what you're up to.
Okay.
Cheers.
You have a great day. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to The Testing Show, sponsored by Qualitest. For more information, please see www.qualitestgroup.com. Do you have questions? Or is there a topic or an idea you'd like to have covered? Please email us at thetestingshow@qualitestgroup.com, and we will answer questions we receive on air.